Welcome to Parents' Perspective. Alana, it's time to come in now, the second grade teacher called. Recess is over. Seven-year-old Alana sat curled up at the front of the monkey bars. Come with me, Mrs. Martin said gently, putting her arm around Alana's shoulder. We're just ready to have a story.
No, Alana jerked away. I don't want to go in. I don't want to go anywhere. Leave me alone.
I know you're upset about your dad. Mrs. Martin squatted down beside her. It's very hard right now. If you'd like, you may sit in my lap for our story time. Alana curled up tighter. We'll be happy to see you when you're ready to join us, Mrs. Martin replied and slowly walked back inside. A tear slid down Alana's cheek and she put her hands up to hide her face. Just then, the figure of a woman in a military uniform appeared in the school doorway. Mrs. Martin pointed out Alana still near the monkey bars. She's over there, she said. From a parent's perspective, what happens when tragedy strikes military families? I'm Sandy Burt.
And I'm Linda Perlis. We're fortunate to have two experts with us today who deal with military families in times of tragedy. Major Dr. Willis Levitt, an Army psychiatrist at the Pentagon, works with children and adolescents. He's also a forensic psychiatrist working with legal matters. Since September 11, 2001, he has been working with a group of mental health professionals to help the injured and their immediate families. Dr. Levitt is Assistant Project Officer with Operation Solace. Welcome to Parents' Perspective, Dr. Levitt.
Thanks for having me here.
Sandy Hanisch is a nurse therapist who works with Dr. Levitt. She has worked with children, adolescents, and adults for over 25 years and has been at the Pentagon for the last 14 months. Thank you for joining us, Ms. Hanisch.
Thank you very much for the opportunity.
Would you tell us a little bit about Operation Solace and your parts in it?
Operation Solace was a project that was initiated shortly after the terrorist attack on the Pentagon on 9/11, 2001. The U.S. Army Surgeon General was tasked with development of an acute and a long-term response to the mental health-related issues that were expected to follow for the population there and the family members of Pentagon employees.
Ms. Hanisch, we'd really like to know a little bit about what each of you does with Operation Solace.
Operation Solace started shortly after the attack, and Dr. Levitt and I have had different roles in the operation. Initially, there was an immediate response to the folks who were working on the outside of the building in the rescue and recovery efforts, and there were tri-service people outside working with all of those folks, as well as volunteers from the community who are experts in disaster mental health.
Tri-service means?
Tri-service means the Army, the Air Force, and the Navy. And they were outside helping those people. I think a really gifted moment in time, you know, simple in many regards, but a really gifted moment in time was when someone, whom I don't know, had the aha experience that there are a lot of people inside this building. Actually, there are 24,000 people inside that building. And those people had all been exposed in various degrees, in various ways, to the whole trauma of the attack. And at that point in time, while there were still folks on the outside helping the rescue and recovery efforts, there were a team of people who moved inside to the Pentagon itself and began walking around it, delivering very similar services to what they were delivering outside, which was really to walk around and check on people and talk to them and see what their experience had been and how they were coping with the situation. So all of that was going on. I was not a part of that. When I first got down to the Pentagon, I did not have the appropriate security clearance to be able to walk around there. So I was doing a lot of my work telephonically, and I was contacting a lot of the injured population, making sure that they didn't need any follow-up medical care that they hadn't gotten, and doing a stress check on them and their families and seeing how they were doing and if there were any of those kind of services that we needed to help them to access.
How do you do a stress check on the telephone? That must have been quite a challenge.
Well, yeah, I think that there are certain, you know, questions that I wanted to know from them, and so I would just asked them, I wanted to find out, first of all, what their physical injuries were, and then I wanted to find out the things that you would expect from people in an acute stress situation, because I started calling them on the 12th of September when I was still up at Walter Reed before I got asked to go down to the Pentagon.
For our listeners who are not familiar with the geography of Washington, Walter Reed is how many miles from the Pentagon?
Oh, I would say probably 12.
Okay, so it's not like in several different states over.
Well, and in fact, it is in different states, but it's across the river. the Pentagon is in Arlington, Virginia, and Walter Reed is in Washington, D.C. So you have to go across one of those bridges to get to it. And that's where I was on the day of the attack. And I started on this this work on the 12th and just went down to begin to do other things down at the Pentagon to help support the team of people working there. And I could continue my work because I needed a computer and a telephone. So as long as I could have those two things, I could continue doing my outreach efforts with the injured population. And that's pretty much what I continued to do for a while. It was very challenging because I couldn't find them all. Mm-hmm. You know, I've had a hard time actually being able to locate these folks. A lot of the records that I had available might have one number transposed that would make it pretty difficult to contact using the phone number or a number transposed in a Social Security number if I tried to go that way. Because this data was collected in the emergency rooms, and I was trying to follow up on people we knew had been injured and that we knew we wanted to make sure that they were all right.
During the first month following 9/11, there was an immense response by all three services to the event. So we had mental health providers coming from Air Force, Army, Navy to provide care to the people on the ground, either injured within the blast area or taking care of first responders. For the Army and Air Force, which works very closely together in its efforts within the Pentagon, we have 90 behavioral health providers, which is an immense immense number of people. And I was asked to provide the on-the-ground leadership to organize the teams to go desk-to-desk, door-to-door within the Pentagon, providing care, screening people to see whether they were at high risk or low risk for the development of any mental health problems or disorders. We also had teams that were focused on development of psychoeducational classes, support groups, critical event debriefings, command consultation.
What is command consultation?
Essentially, it's meeting with the leader of an office, perhaps a supervisor, so that he or she knows what to look for in his or her employees if they have behaviors or demonstrate symptoms that may be suggestive of a mental health problem, and give them ways to intercede and make the environment as healthy as possible to prevent the development of any mental health problems.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to continue our discussion about tragedy striking a military family.
Two excellent books written by hosts Sandra Burt and Linda Perlis, Parents as Mentors and Washington, D.C. with Kids, are available at all major bookstores and on the web.
Welcome back to Parents' Perspective. We are talking with Major Dr. Willis Levitt and Clinical Nurse Specialist Sandy Hanisch about what happens when tragedy strikes a military family. Did you see a high percentage of problems with people who were not physically injured themselves?
It's rather impressive. I mean, during the course of the last year, we've had 75,000 contacts.
Oh, my gosh.
We have gone desk to desk, door to door within the Pentagon, which is the world's largest office building, having over 17 miles of corridors alone. In addition, because the crash knocked out a significant wedge of the Pentagon, many of the people who would have been working there were displaced to office buildings within the Crystal City area.
Which is right nearby.
Right nearby. And to date, we've not only covered the Pentagon, but also 48 office buildings outside of the Pentagon, which is an immense area.
Yeah.
Yes.
So I would say, in general, everyone that we have met has been affected in some way by the terrorist act. They're either sad, angry, more reflective, perhaps more thankful for what they have, not taking things for granted. Everyone has been affected in some way, but very few to the degree of a mental health disorder.
That's very impressive, actually.
It is.
It really is.
From the team of 90 military mental health providers, we were able to tailor that down to a team of 10, and eventually in December 2001 timeframe, we switched over to all civilian staff, except for me. And so now I have 9 social workers and Ms. Hanisch, who still provide the same services that we've been providing since 12 September.
Can you tell us a little bit about how the children are being served in this whole mix?
Well, Operation Solace has focused on the families, next of kin families, with specific emphasis on those families with children. Since 12 September, we've had a list of all the families who have been affected, and we have social workers who have been assigned to each family to call to establish rapport, a connection, to offer services, to provide parental guidance, to help the parent or guardian identify what resources were available, but also to identify any mental health-related symptoms.
Have Operation Solace people worked directly with any of those children?
Yes. Although most of the work has been done by telephone with the parent, there have been opportunities where we've worked with children directly. With the help of the Walter Reed Child and Adolescent Psychiatry Clinic, headed by Dr. Chun, we have had support groups, essentially a parents group at the same time that we've held a group for adolescents and children, so that they could discuss their losses. Essentially, that was one major thing that we provided. Another thing that we provided, too, is that during the course of the year, there have been times when the families have come together in Washington, D.C. for the one-month observance ceremony and the one-year observance ceremony. And during those times, Operation Solace social workers interacted with the families and children directly.
Were their responses any different from other grieving family responses?
I think that military children have gone through their parents being deployed, and those deployments frequently can last for like 6 months, sometimes a year, but 6 months. And I think that prepared them somewhat for their parents to be gone. And, of course, they're like firemen, you know, or policemen. I mean, they know that there's some risk attached to what their parent does. I think the difference was that they don't think that that risk is attached when their parents are not deployed. They don't think that that risk is going to be attached when they're sitting at their desk in an office.
Mm-hmm.
And so this moved it into the sudden realm, the unexpected realm for them. They had been able to assume that there was, you know, safety, that they were going about their normal everyday life. And, of course, that didn't turn out to be the case. And so the suddenness of that, I think, brought it home in a different way to them. And also, you know, then there was all the issue of all the media coverage, which, you know, there have been a lot of things recently, people talking about, you know, and it's not necessarily good for anybody, a child or an adult, to watch things over and over again. And it's hard, particularly for children younger than school age, to not understand that it's not happening all over again, you know, that this is a past event. So I think that their responses were probably the same as most children would be in a sudden traumatic loss of a parent. If your father is killed on the way to work because somebody who's under the influence of alcohol jumps the center line and, you know, there's a head-on crash and your father is killed, that's a sudden and traumatic loss. For these children, even though they may be aware that their parents were military and that there's a risk attached to that, I don't believe that they were particularly expecting it on, you know, that Tuesday morning.
Do you think that because children of military families are involved in a culture where there is a response to problems by taking up arms, that those children would be more likely to have an anger response versus a sad response? I mean, obviously there's all this together, but I wonder whether there would be more of the anger, the outward response.
No. I mean, in a word, no. But to tell you a little bit more my thinking about that, I think that those kind of responses are much more related to individual personality and individual history and, you know, what they've seen other adults do in their life and in these kind of circumstances. So I don't think that you're going to get a more angry response out of a military child. I think you can get as many, you know, sad, withdrawn, quiet, isolating kinds of kids as you can the angry, acting out kind of kids.
And that has been true in this case, too. Mm-hmm. Within last year, there has been no increased incidence in angry outburst or behavioral problems with these children.
How significant is extended family in these situations, since often military families are separated geographically from the rest of the family?
Well, it is true that with military families, there's a move every 2 to 3 years. And this move can take you from Germany to Korea and several places in between. So it's quite common to be geographically separated from grandparents and other extended family members. Support of any type is helpful, though. And so whether it's coming from extended family members or the local community, both very important to military families and well-received.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to finish our discussion about when tragedy strikes in a military family.
For an audio cassette copy of Any Parent's Perspective show, send a check or money order for $5 with your name, address, and phone number to Parents Perspective, P.O. Box 42283, Washington, D.C., 20015.
Welcome back to Parents Perspective. We're talking with Major Dr. Willis Levitt and Clinical Nurse Specialist Sandy Hanisch about what happens when tragedy strikes a military family.
What kinds of things can people in the community do to be supportive of military families?
In the Washington, D.C. area, which is basically where the Pentagon is located, in this area you will find more people living in community-based housing than you will find living on a post. And therefore, these people are embedded within the community neighborhoods, attending mm-hmm. community schools, attending community churches, being members of, you know, the Kiwanis and the Elks and whatever that they're members of. And because of that, they have the same sort of social support in some regards. Although the problem with that is how long they've been here. You know, if they just transferred in, they wouldn't have had a chance to establish that yet. The military, though, it is true that, you know, they do gather around and they do become the surrogate family until extended family can arrive. Or even if they can't arrive, then they will provide a lot of external supports to move in and help to support the family. They assign people who will actually be working with the family and help walk them through the different things they have to go through if there are no family members around to help them. That includes, you know, all the mortuary things, all the things that you have to do in a situation like that. If there's nobody else around, then the military provides the supportive people to come and help them with that.
But across the country where all of our listeners are and around mm-hmm. the world, if they know of a military family where the father or mother has been called up now as the uh-huh. reserves are being called up or anything like that, what kinds of things would be particularly helpful for a family to receive in terms of support?
I would say it's very similar to helping any family in need. Uh-huh. I think one thing is just know who your neighbors are. That certainly can be helpful. Don't be reluctant to make contact. Ask if you can be supportive to the family and offer
taking over a meal or having the kids over for a play date or
helping normal to pick them up from school. I mean, the normal kind of things that you would need or that you would extend to anybody else who that you knew, and, you know, and who was a neighbor who, you know, your children may play together, providing, you know, an outing for the children, because there's some of those things that they really don't need to be a part of. And there may not be anything else or anybody around to help with, so the neighbors could, you know, provide an outing for the children along with their children. Playing for children is a really great relaxer sometimes and a way to really explore their own emotional responses. So go ahead and letting them play.
One thing that I noticed personally is that following the attack, as I went to and from the Pentagon in uniform, I would be approached by people on the metro, which is the subway system in Washington, D.C., and people would just thank me for being in uniform and serving the country. And to me, that felt good. Even now, it sends chills up and down my spine. And I think that providing that same kind of thank you or personal touch to families would be equally helpful. I mean, it's incredibly supportive. And during these times, which are troubling for all of us, it's very helpful to those military families because they do have to endure a lot of hardship.
Are there any resources that you would suggest for parents who want to learn more about things to do when tragedy strikes military families?
I think there are a couple of things. One, I would particularly like to suggest that people look into is a program called TAPS, which stands for the Tragedy Assistance Program for Survivors. They do a lot of work with grieving children, and there's an 800 number I'd like to give you. It's 1-800-959-8277. I believe they also have a website. I do not have the site from that. I'm sure that one of the search engines could be very helpful in helping people find that. But again, it's the Tragedy Assistance Program for Survivors. Do wonderful work with children and a lot of support for whether you're a spouse, whether you're a parent. I think that people would be well served checking that out.
Some additional resources include the website for the American Academy of Child and Adolescent Psychiatry. That website is www.aacap.org. www.aacap.org. Operation Solace has a website of its own, and that's www.anewbirthoffreedom.com.
Catchy phrase.
Yeah, anewbirthoffreedom.com is all run together. It's all one word. In addition, school counselors, community hospitals can provide useful information to families who are curious about how to help children in times of tragedy.
Well, it's always best to go right to the top, and we're certainly fortunate to have had the opportunity to do so with Dr. Willis Levitt and clinical nurse specialist Sandy Hanisch from the Pentagon. Thank you both so much for helping us to better understand what happens when tragedy strikes a military family.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Our gift for our first caller is an autographed copy of our book, Washington, D.C. with Kids. Just call us toll-free at 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address. That's 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address and mention show 168. Tell us if you can what station you're listening to. Since we're airing all over the world, it's always fun to know what station you're tuning into. Parents as Mentors and Washington, D.C. with Kids are both available at all major bookstores and on the web.
To learn more about Parents' Perspective and our books, Parents as Mentors and Washington, D.C. with Kids, visit our website, http://i.am/parentsperspective. There are no W's in that website address. Again, it's http://i.am/parentsperspective. This is Sandy Burt and Linda Perlis. We're glad you could share Parents' Perspective. Today's program was made possible with generous support from the Motion Picture Information Service. Our sound engineer is Damon Fisher. Music for this program was composed and performed by Jonathan Burt.